VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome to the VanWee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Now here are your hosts of the VanWee Financial Hour, Stephen and Adam VanWee.
It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. And this is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And that ka-ching sound that you just heard as we were coming in is echoed many, many times throughout the city of Houston today and pretty much in every little local bar and pub in this country because, of course, it is a very special weekend for multiple reasons, not the least of which is that it is Super Bowl Saturday. So big game tomorrow for all you football fans. But perhaps even more important than that to some people, two that I can think of, is that this is also a very special Saturday for a very, very personal reason. Today is the first show of our third year, and even Adam's wife was surprised to hear we were doing that. She thought it was the second year because that's how fast time flies these days.
It sure does. There's no doubt.
And I thought I'd take everybody down memory lane just a little bit for the people who've been around with us forever. For you new folks, you'll get a little background. Bear with us. This is a rare little foray into personal stuff, perhaps, but it also is quite important, I think, in the long run. Anyway, I'll remind everybody that lines are open, 222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Callers always go directly to the head of the line, so give us a call. We will be having Super Bowl trivia probably right after the break. And for those of you who are new to the show, this is a live show. We always do it live, and not everybody does that. So this is one of the rare chances you have to ask us anything you would like to ask us, financial or otherwise, and get on the air. Or if you don't want to get on the air, you can always talk to our producer, leave a question, which we'll be happy to answer. And Adam will tell you some other ways to get hold of us as time goes on throughout the show. But first, 2 years ago today, and we had decided that we were going to set up our own company, and we were awaiting the approval from all the necessary places, namely Tallahassee. And we decided that rather than wait for that to happen, because this slot had opened up on the station, we would just go ahead and start the show, even though our business wasn't technically open. We could at least get our feet wet and let people know what we were planning to do. So Saturday morning, about 9:30, I left the house and came out here. Adam had left a little earlier or made better time, one or the other, but he was in the building, and I was about 5 minutes out. My phone rang in the car, and I've got hands free, so I answered the phone, and he said, "Dad, you're not going to believe this." And I said, "I'm not going to believe what?" And he said, "We have a power outage throughout the whole building, and there is no radio station." And I said, "Oh, isn't that interesting?" So we got here, and the whole building was just absolutely dead. And come to find out, he had almost been stranded on the elevator. He just got off the elevator
seconds earlier.
And since then, we take the stairs. We're on the second floor. You never know. But anyway, we walked in, and all was quiet. So the real estate folks were still here. They had not been able to finish out the last part of their show. So we had never met before, of course. And we sat around and talked to them for a while. And they were, as always, very nice. We had a good chat. And we kept checking with the JEA. JEA assured us that the power would come back on about 11:30. Well, as you know, 11 o'clock ends this show. So we were just kind of sitting around. Earphones weren't out, and the notes weren't ready, and nothing was really ready to go. When, lo and behold, about 10-11 minutes to 11 o'clock, all of a sudden lights start coming on and computers start to reboot and things like that. And we had not been prepared for that eventuality because JEA had continued to insist that we were not coming back till about 11:30. So we got the microphones on and managed to dole out a few words. And meanwhile, we'd been getting emails and such from people who knew that we were starting the show.
Where are you?
I can't get to you. You said it was 600 a.m. and they're not there. And, of course, we couldn't just tell them all that, no, it's not there, because when we talked, the only people who could hear it were in this room. But anyway, we got kind of caught off guard. And those of you who know me well know that I've been doing radio for a long, long time, but I'd never done it in the captain's chair. And the only thing that Adam had ever done on the radio was cut a couple of promos that we were going to use for the show, so it was brand new to him. And here we are, about 8 minutes to 11, and all of a sudden, it's live. So I would imagine it sounded a little rocky to all of you. I hope by now you've all realized that we've settled into the routine a little bit. But it's fun to talk about that because it's a memory that is absolutely everlasting to me. I mean, you couldn't make that stuff up, folks.
No, it was a crazy day, but we powered through it, and it got better from there.
And that was 2 years ago today. This is our first show of year three. Thank you to all who helped to make it possible. You regulars out there that keep coming back, we keep getting feedback from you, get a lot of inquiries and a lot of people coming into the office who mostly have heard us on the radio. We do our best to come up with topics of interest, primarily financial. We like to leave some of the other stuff alone. You can hear politics all week long if you want to. You don't need to hear it on the weekend. Everyone who knows us understands that we are conservatives. I have a few things to say that will kind of assure everyone of that, because some things happened that are very, very germane to all of us over the last few days. But fundamentally, what's been going on has been very positive since the 8th of November. And those of you who are in the market know that it has been a pretty good time. Will it last? No one knows for sure. Should it last? Absolutely it should, I believe. I think that the things are wrong that have been wrong with this economy are largely driven by political forces. And a lot of those political forces are now in a position where they're changing every single day. I think it'll be good for all of us. And we got to talk about that, too. What should you as investors be looking for, and what should you do to take advantage of this without getting crazy? Because we never like to do everything all at once, unless it's, for instance, a new client comes in. We design a portfolio. There's no better day to buy it than the day that it comes in. But in general, if you're looking for a way to tiptoe back into a market that you've been afraid of because you listened to all the naysayers or didn't believe that the election results would go your way, or if you really, really wanted the results to be the other way, you might do something too. And we've found over our years of doing this business that the dumbest thing you can do is to make long-term decisions based on short-term events. The election itself was a short-term event. The consequences of it will last a lot longer. And I would like to believe, as the optimist that I always am, that those consequences will carry on. Now, we did have a very interesting week in the market. There was a lot of variation in it. It started out like something may be wrong. I'm going to read you some headlines from that after the break. We're going to go away for a very short time. Please stay tuned and stick with us the whole hour. It should be a lot of fun. After the break, we'll do the market wrap. Adam will have that. We'll talk about what people did incorrectly this week. And there are a lot of those, believe me. You can't believe everything you read, folks. You can't believe everything you hear. But you can believe us, because we will not lead you astray. We could be wrong, but we will not lead you astray intentionally. That is for certain. So lines are open. Area code 904-222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour, number 3 year.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on this Super Saturday. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we got a lot to talk about today, but first, let's give out a trivia question, the Super Bowl trivia, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 636-7888, and just like us, the area code is 904. The phones are starting to ring, but I'm going to give this out just in case somebody wants to take a shot at it. How many chicken wings will be eaten tomorrow? Now, that is a lot of money for people in the business.
Now, are you asking me personally?
No, I think I'll make it a collective thing all of a sudden.
Okay, so by the United States.
Yes, in the U.S. Tomorrow on Super Bowl Sunday, how many chicken wings will be consumed? And just to tell you that it's a large number, I want the answer within the nearest 100 million wings. That is a lot of wings. Captain Dave.
Hey, Steve. How you doing, Adam?
Hey,
we
good. How are you?
Wonderful. What's up with you guys today?
Oh, not much. I wanted a little help here. Have you noticed, or is it just me, that there seems to be a lot more volatility in tips and S-tips lately?
It's just you.
Okay.
No, it always will be. The bonds are longer duration. Therefore, there'll be more variability. If you know the basic rule of thumb, the shorter the bond, the less interest rate fluctuations are going to move the price of that bond in the market. Mm-hmm. So if you go out to the 30-year treasuries, for instance, those bonds will move the most. I actually have a little chart of it, what would happen if I might be able to put my fingers on it. But S-tip stands for short-term tips.
Short-term, right.
And they will not yield as much either.
I was primarily thinking about tips. Like I saw them, I guess, over this week a couple of times. They go up about 20, 30 cents, which is, you know, a lot on $102. But and then by the end of the day, they're back down to where they started.
I've noticed that. That's demand. That money's flowing elsewhere right now. I tell you what bothered me this month. The tips didn't pay a dividend this month. And that's supposed to be tied to the consumer price index for all items. And it has been rising steadily, and they did not pay this month. And I'm a little bit put off by that. You understand that in a time of falling inflation, you're not going to get a dividend payment on the tip fund. And frankly, right. Dave, I didn't have a chance this morning to look up what their reason was on their white papers that they generally publish. But I'm quite sure that those will be resuming pretty soon. If you look at the inflation numbers, they're pretty steadily going up. So
yeah,
I'll like them.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not strongly invested, but I have a percentage of my portfolio in tips and S-tips.
I do too, and I believe that tips are going to be one of the best things to be holding for the next few years, because there's virtually no chance that A, we would not have inflation, but also that the government will keep hiding it the way they have been.
I think
it's becoming so obvious now to everyone that you're paying more. It's not steady. You've seen the prices at the gas pumps. They're going up and down. But if you look at things like the housing market, it's been a steady march forward in pricing in the housing market.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, you're paying a lot more for a lot of other things, too. Your cable bill's probably up, that sort of thing. So I think that
there's an old saying that figures can lie and liars can figure.
Yes, and that's the truth.
You know, one thing. All of a sudden, there was an article yesterday about U6.
Yes.
Now, nobody has ever mentioned U6.
I actually have the number. It's 9.4%.
Right. But they never published U6. They never talked about U6.
Nope. Doesn't sound good.
Talk about it.
Yeah, it doesn't sound good to the government.
The people who are doing the producing the information or disinformation.
Right.
Seem to feel now like, well, we'll publish bad numbers now because we don't like this guy.
And exactly. That's, and it's so true. For those of you who don't know, U3 is the unemployment number that we hear all the time. And that this week came out at 4.8%, which was up a tick because some more people came into the job market.
That's actually a good thing.
It is a good thing. I agree. But the U6 number takes the disaffected employees, in other words, the discouraged long-term people who've been looking for a job so long and can't find one. that they go out of the job market. They are removed from U3 to make the number look good, but they're packed into U6, making that number look not so good at 9.4%.
Right.
So those people
years,
need to come
back. We
didn't
hear one word about U6.
Nope. We've always looked it up, but you won't hear it on the news. It's kind of like the inflation number, Dave. Have you ever noticed that sometimes they report?
There are some things that just don't make sense. I'll give you an example of where I put that number in. What is net worth? At a fire sale?
Good point.
What is net worth? What you can get for it? Well, how soon do you need to sell it? Whatever it is.
Yep.
I'm worth this amount of money. Yeah, if I sold my house tomorrow and I liquidated all my stocks and did everything, but then I'd be having a fire sale, I probably wouldn't get as much as it's worth. But then what is it worth?
You can count on it. That's why there are different ways to do values on things. But as far as tips go, you're going to see a lot of fluctuation in those because the inflationary numbers are not exactly marching along. They also will start paying more as the Fed raises rates, which it declined to do, of course, this week. But then the underlying bonds, as the old ones mature and the new ones come into the fund itself, they will be a higher coupon bond, so the fund will start to earn more interest from the government. Personally, I'm in love with tips. Adam's not quite so high on them.
I like them. I just don't love them.
Yeah, I use a bigger percent than he does.
Uh-huh. All right, guys. Well, thanks for the information, Steve. Adam, have a good weekend.
You know anything about chicken wings?
No, but the number is probably a bozillion.
I think you hit it. It's a bozillion. You want to take something of a stab?
Oh, I don't know. 300 million.
Way too low.
That's what I figured.
But thank you. Actually, that's what Adam guessed.
Easy,
all right, be good. Cheryl, good morning.
Hi, Dale. I think they said on the TV last night, $1.3 billion.
You have been listening and paying attention. 1.33 billion chicken wings, which if you divide by two is a lot of chickens running around that are flightless, huh? You got it exactly right. Sure. We'll put you on hold, get your address, and we'll send you a little something from Mr. Bales at First Coast Alarm. Unless you have any other questions we can handle.
No.
All right, good. Well, thanks for calling.
I have one question.
Sure, sure.
Who do you think will win the Super Bowl?
The one with the most points.
I'm hoping for Atlanta, but I think it might go other way.
Me too.
I think everybody likes to see the underdog do well, unless you're from Boston or something like that. So we'll be rooting for
one team to own the Super Bowl.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, though. I really detest what Atlanta did to the Packers, but it wasn't Atlanta's fault.
But if you're going to go out, you want to lose to the eventual champion.
That's true, and that's a very good point. So maybe we'll have some luck, and that's exactly what will happen.
Okay,
we're going to put you on hold, and Alan will get your address. Thank you. 1.33 billion wings in one day, and Adam promises he's going to do his share.
I definitely will. I can assure you of that.
Okay, very good. Let's talk about the market and the jobs reports. There's some interesting things throughout all of that, and they're kind of tied together in a respect. And that Friday was really kind of a big unexpected day, I guess.
It was. And last week I had mentioned that volatility had all but disappeared this year. But I did tell you that it was going to come back. I just didn't know it was going to come back 2 days later. On Monday, we started to see some, and the market kind of tanked a little bit on Monday and Tuesday. However, there was a bunch of buying going into the close both days, so that was a little bit encouraging. And the media outlets immediately pounced all over this and said, oh, the Trump bounce is done. It's the immigration policy causing all of this. They never really gave any airtime to the possibility that the Fed was meeting and there might be a rate hike or something like that, which has been, I mean, it's just clear, so clear that to me that, of course, that equities would go down on Monday and Tuesday leading into the announcement on Wednesday or Thursday of whether or not there's going to be a rate hike. And
my favorite Tuesday headline out of a whole bunch of them that we've seen, markets don't believe in Trump for the long term. They deduce that on Monday's results.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was that about short-term events affecting long-term results?
It's over, guys. This Trump thing, flash in the pan.
Yeah. So it turned out that the Fed didn't raise rates, as you mentioned, and the jobs report then came out and it looked really good. And then Trump decided to roll back some regulations on Wall Street, including Dodd-Frank, and the market responded in kind with a big rally on Friday to close the week, and it basically closed out flat. This was a rally really led by the financial sector, with Goldman Sachs adding 72 of the Dow's 186-point gain on Friday. Pretty amazing. And the financial sector accounted for more than two-thirds of Friday's gain. So if you were long financials going into the close Thursday, you probably had a really good Friday. And
you didn't rub it in?
No, I didn't. Not this time. Anyways.
I am the skeptic on the financial sector. Adam is the bull. And he's been a lot more right than I have lately.
Lately, yeah. And I think repealing Dodd-Frank is going to be a big boon for them.
Now, I am going to talk a lot about that after the break. I do have a secondary trivia question, which will earn you a big attaboy or a big attagirl if you get it right. Who was the first woman to ever do the coin toss of the Super Bowl?
Don't know that one.
That's a pretty good question, isn't it? And the answer will be intuitively obvious to him as soon as it dawns on him why I'm asking that. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about the 51 most dangerous Americans. I'm going to talk about Dodd-Frank. I'm going to talk about the fiduciary rule. And all of those things, I'm going to put them together in one big old package. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour, Year 3.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And once again, I tell everybody, thank you so much for listening. This is show number one of year number three, and it has gone by very, very quickly. This segment sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794, and it's a good time of year to be doing some gussying up. It's project time. All right. Know what a fiduciary is if you're in our business. Not everybody else knows what a fiduciary is, but it's a real simple concept. A fiduciary is someone who has to put his or her client's interests ahead of his or her, the advisor's, own. It just seems very logical to me. I've never considered that we might do things any other way, but we are in the minority in the financial field. Most of the traditional stockbrokers and insurance agents and so on have never been subjected to a fiduciary standard in dealing with their customers. And by the way, that term is very important because you can't have clients unless you accept a fiduciary responsibility. You have customers. We have clients and really nice ones at that, but I digress. So the fiduciary rule has been suggested and actually passed through Congress to be applied to all forms of people who hold themselves out to be financial advisors. So to me, that's a really good thing. Why would you want someone who weren't acting in your best interest in dealing with your money? It makes no sense to me. The strangest part of this is that this was proposed by the most left-wing senator in the entire Senate, Elizabeth Warren. And it is supported by pretty much the entire progressive wing of the Progressive Party, a place where I find myself generally in abject disagreement with what they're doing and saying. But in this case, I believe they got it absolutely right. The second strangest thing is all the blowback they're getting on this rule by people on the right, including Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House. And I am very embarrassed every time I hear people on the right talk about how this rule would be bad for the public. They have this figure that someone dreamed up somewhere that is going to cost the public $80 billion because they're not going to be able to get advice anymore because it's going to be so expensive under the fiduciary standard.
It's so what they're basically saying is that they would be taking away cheap, bad advice from lower income individuals.
Yes. So
their somehow that's a bad thing.
Yeah. Their conclusion is that no advice or no bad advice is better than no advice at all. I disagree. I think no advice at all would be a vast improvement over bad or biased advice. And I'm not saying that all commission people give you bad advice. You just don't have a way to know.
No, you really don't. They're not held to the standard. So how would you know if they're good or bad?
The current standard for commission people is called a suitability standard. Suitability is a word that we use, but we use it in a much different sense. Suitability for us means the first meeting. You've heard us say many, many times that in our day jobs, we offer a free one-hour consultation in our office just for the asking, and it will cost you nothing, and we will not hound you afterwards. It's called suitability, meaning that that's the meeting where we collectively decide, both the people on our side of the table and the people on the other side of the table, whether there might be a basis for doing business together, which involves a whole bunch more than just, hey, I kind of like you or whatever. Is it going to be economically sound for the potential client? Is it something that we are comfortable with doing? There are some situations where it would be just so bizarre that we wouldn't handle it because we don't know enough, or you need a real specialist. But we, most of the time, can offer things to people that would be good for them, and we do it all in their best interest because we do adhere to the fiduciary standard. This brings in another term, fee only. And I'm going to have Adam tell you more about this in the how to contact us part. But we are fee only certified financial planners. Now, a lot of you out there don't know what a certified financial planner is. Well, if you have your taxes done by H&R Block, you are not going to get a certified public accountant. You're going to get a tax preparer. Qualified? Sure, probably, definitely. The supervisor would be for sure. The trainees may not be yet, but you're going to get the job done. But if you have a complicated set of taxes because your financial situation demands it, you get a CPA. A certified public accountant. Why not have your financial planner be certified? That said, we'll take a little break and honor what we always say, callers to the head. And this is Marshall. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's fun to be here.
To every one of them, but it's been most of them around our household.
Well, great. We appreciate it. What's up today besides the expectations of the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I've got a perspective question for you.
Okay.
You get to speak to a lot of reasonably high demographic folks from both an intellect standpoint and a resources standpoint. So that's why I'm asking this question of y'all.
Okay.
What do you think it's going to take for that broad of a group? I think, what is it? The mass affluent is one of those terms being used.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To believe that the moves of the administration are going positive for the economy, rather than, you know, that little devilish character on their shoulder, meaning the news media, you know, cranking along about things being problems. I mean, at some point, intelligent people should be able to say, like listening to Robert Reicha, on the phone. I mean,
that I heard that interview. That was incredible. This man doesn't have a brain cell working, as far as I can tell.
Well, I mean, people to realize it's intentional on people's part,
of course,
to create a challenge. What do you think it's going to? Because obviously, there's a lot of people still feeling, oh, well, there's a little problem. There's a little problem. There's a little problem. At what point do you? What do you think will be the turning point? Just y'all's opinion.
Well, Alvin, I'm going to tell you the hurdle that Adam and I have, and I think his is higher than mine. But we were raised in a free trade environment. In other words, the economics as we know it, Milton Friedman style, the freer the trade, the better the economy. We always said, follow the money. Let every country, let every company, let every state, whatever it is, do the things that they do best, trade freely, and everybody gets the best deal. But there is a real strange line between free trade and fair trade. And fair trade is another one of those terms that has been co-opted by the left and made into something it isn't. They mean simply that we trade with countries who do well by their citizens and that kind of thing. And what I mean by fair trade is that both sides are equal. So if we send exports to Mexico and they put a tariff on them or to China or whatever, and we import their goods for free, is that a good deal for Americans or not? We get their goods cheaper, but we lost out in our exporting. It's not free, and in my opinion, it's not fair. So when Trump came onto the scene and started complaining about the whole free trade concept, I was kind of on board, and Adam was definitely on board. I hate the word tariffs. I'm sure Adam does.
Oh, absolutely.
You remember when George W. Bush put a tariff on steel for a while? And what happened? Our steel industry got back on its feet a little bit, and he took them off. If you look at these things as purely temporary, you're probably going to get over that hurdle just a little bit better than you would otherwise. But to me, that's...
Let me give you this picture. Just call those items a cattle prod. You don't hold the prod to the cattle and just let it run.
That's true.
Give them a little nudge.
Hey, Marshall, can you hang on for the break? Good. There's a couple more things I want to discuss on this front that are really germane to what's going on right now. Thanks. I'll put you on hold. All right, we're going to have to take a break here. This is a good question for a lot of people who are skeptical of Trump because he's not a traditional Republican, or they're skeptical of Trump because he used to be a Democrat, or they currently are, or something like that. Watching what's going on is really shaking things up, and it's going to involve a lot more shakeup before it settles in. So there's not going to be a simple answer to this thing, but it's worth a little more discussion. All right, we'll be back right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we've been talking to Marshall, and I'm going to call him up here again in a second. Marshall likes to call us with intellectual questions, and I was just thinking to myself, man, I'm glad the show isn't on until 10 o'clock in the morning so my brain gets in gear. Marshall.
Gentlemen, that's too nice a compliment, but thank you so much.
I was talking to Adam through the break, and I said I'd like to just ask him, because he's young, relatively.
Yeah. Not as young as
it's
I used to
be. It's easy for me to say, believe me, and Marshall. But I want to get his perspective, because he is really classically trained, as I was, as far as government goes. And he came to a point in about the second minute of the discussion over the break that I think is absolutely critical. And I'm going to let him take you there by just starting out. I asked him, what will it take you, Adam, to get over your reluctance about the way Trump and company are approaching this whole trade deal? And I thought his answer was excellent. So here we go.
So my fear is that I have a family of four that I have to provide for and buy all sorts of consumer goods, just as everyone else does. And if those consumer goods start to rise in price because we're making it all domestically and it costs more, that is a net negative to my budget. And that money will have to come from somewhere. So then I started thinking, I would much rather support other Americans who need it and put them back to work by buying things than by paying my taxes to the government, who's going to inevitably waste 40% of it and then redistribute it as they see fit. I'd much rather pay 10% more for a consumer good that puts a fellow American back to work. But that means that I would have to cut back in other areas, unless at the same time I got a tax cut that saved me that extra money, in which case it's a net neutral to me, and I'd be more than happy to redistribute my money that way. But I'm just not sure that that's how this whole equation is going to work right now. So I need to see that before I can really be on board with the whole plan of this administration.
And what two groups are going to stand in the way of cutting taxes?
That would be the Democrats.
And?
And who else?
The Republicans.
Oh.
The
Republicans. Yeah, of course.
What did I say about Trump about, a month ago? The biggest headwind Donald Trump is going to be fighting as president of the United States is elected Republicans, because they are in the same mold as everyone else has been in D.C. too long. The first thing Paul Ryan did when Trump came up with his 15% federal business tax is Ryan said, well, how about 20? That is the wrong response, people. How about, oh, you got elected on that. How soon can we pass it?
Exactly, especially if you're of the trained group like Dad and I are that says, really, companies don't pay taxes. Individuals pay taxes. Companies just charge you more in order to pay those taxes.
The right rate for corporate taxes is zero.
Correct.
And I think most of us who've ever studied the fair tax understand that well. All right, give us your take on this, Marshall.
If we give Joe the plumber more work, okay, and I use that as the typical hardworking upper trained blue collar worker.
Yeah, one of my plumbers is named Joe, so it works.
Yeah, and yeah. It's like we haven't there. I mean, I look around construction sites at how many people are employed and working, but they're not that well trained. But if you have more and more work going on, yes, you're going to have some inflation from a wage standpoint,
mm-hmm.
but you're going to have people who are paid that more people start getting your and my goods and services, and it changes our economy as well. Now, we could choose to be charitable, and that's important that we do choose to be charitable, not be mandated to be charitable by raise our taxes so they can run the money through Washington and take 10%. You know, if Washington had to be judged by one of those charity judging companies, they wouldn't get judged very well.
That's the truth. Government is not a good deal in this country. If you look at what we pay for it and what we get. Yeah, part of this.
Well, I just think.
Go ahead.
We're moving in a positive. Again, one of my favorite people, guy John Allison, I probably mentioned to you before, the former chairman of BB&T, was interviewed after mm-hmm. coming out of Trump
Tower. I remember
Tower.
Him. Yes, yes.
He said, because he understands the small business bank, because they were so focused on that. He said, "We are the small business's partner. The regulator has forgotten that." Well, that's true. The restaurant that you enjoy going to, he needs to have a little credit line to help him. Well, if he has problems with it, his banker is somewhat his partner. Yes, the banker wants to make interest, but the banker does have the risk that the man can't make the payments and the banker has to take collateral or something. So, but the banker has to be educated enough to make that proper decision. And if you don't have that, then businesses can't grow.
The banker has a bigger problem than that. The banker's problem is Dodd-Frank.
Yeah, Dodd-Frank should be called Ben Dover.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's exactly what it is.
I have a theory, Marshall. One of my many, many old theories is that when any piece of legislation bears the name or names of the people who started it, as soon as they are all out of Congress, it should automatically be sunsetted. The new people in Congress then can look at the results that we got from that law, good or bad, and decide whether or not to continue it in any way, shape, or form. But I would take people's names off of laws, or I would take the laws out of existence. Dodd and Frank are both gone. Sarbanes and Oxley are both gone. Unfortunately, we'd still have campaign finance reform until McCain finally does us all a favor and retires. But I digress again. But I absolutely agree with you. Dodd-Frank should be called almost anything. I call it the Dodd-Frank overreaction to the financial crisis of 2008 bill. How's that?
That was created by Christopher Dodd
and Barney Frank. Yes. And
they were the
passed
two
by
most
a liberal
guilty
Congress
of the mortgage meltdown.
They absolutely.
The most guilty.
They caused it. They walked away scot-free. In fact, Chris Dodd walked out with his cute little place in Ireland that he didn't pay for himself because of his connections, and all of those rumors that are actually factual. Anyway, part of this thing with Trump that I was just talking about, where it's rumored he's going to postpone the fiduciary rule, but he is going to undergo a review of all the regulatory environment, and that's going to include the Consumer Finance Protection Board.
Actually, those rumors were being reported as it had already happened on Friday.
Which it did not.
No.
Yeah, that's fake news, again, as people again. Like to say.
Well, the one thing I like is a lot of the people that he seemed to be calling in for opinions are pretty smart people.
That's the truth. Absolutely.
Okay, like, I can't think of another banker other than Mr. Allison to be called in to say, what do we need to do to get lending to small business right again?
Yeah, that's the truth.
That's the success that his programs will have, is continuing in that direction. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for the vine today, and
Marshall,
look forward to listening to you next week.
Quick question before you go.
Yes.
Do you know who runs, a couple questions actually, do you know who runs the Consumer Finance Protection Board?
Oh, gosh, John.
No.
It's a guy who has no review.
Richard Cordray.
Richard Cordray.
He is an abject disaster. And he's the one they picked when Elizabeth Warren, who invented the thing, couldn't even get the job herself because she was such a disaster. Do you know who he reports to?
Yeah, the Fed.
Yes. Now, what's wrong with that?
Congress.
What's wrong with that? This Consumer Protection Board, invented by Congress, reports to the Federal Reserve, not the Treasury Department? Seriously?
Don't get me wrong. Too Big to Fail was a nightmare.
Yes.
And there were too many people that got very wealthy that should have paid great penalties by going to jail.
That's true.
But Professor Warren took it too far.
Absolutely.
The CFP took it too far.
Hey, do you know who the first woman to toss a coin at the Super Bowl was?
Lamar Hunt's wife.
No, come on. More important than that. It was Mrs. Lombardi. See, Wisconsin people know that.
Okay, good.
Who better than the representative of the Lombardi Trophy, right?
Absolutely.
You Wisconsinites should be very proud. Marshall,
thanks so much.
Enjoy the game. All right, everybody. I got one more on this fiduciary thing. This is kind of cool. Merrill Lynch is going to start telling their clients how much they're actually paying their brokers voluntarily. That had quotation marks all over it. It can't hurt to know more about who you're dealing with. Give us a call at the office. Go to the website, Vanley Financial. Listen to the show. There's any number of ways to do this. Thank you all again. This is so much fun starting out year three. We'll be here next Saturday, just like always. You be here with us. It's the Vanley Financial Hour.